Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang Podcast, episode 274. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with that young boy with the genius level IQ, Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
The man who can lift small cars off trapped children, Graham Thickens.
Ha ha ha, I'm pumped, baby.
And the fellow who can freak out old ladies without wearing his clown makeup, Phil Wilson.
What was it? Would you get up early and write intros for us all? Is that the plan?
That is the plan. Come on, man.
But when you do see Phil with his clown makeup, it is pretty freaky.
It is. You know, it is funny, though. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but my kids were always freaked out about clowns. Were yours?
Clowns and mimes.
Really?
Yeah, I hate Can you imagine Phil as a mime? That would be awesome.
I did mime for a while.
You did?
Oh, no.
When I was in high school, yes. Part of theater training. You had to learn how to be a mime and annoying at the same time. So.
Well, and then we heard you were a mime on the radio. But I'm pumped.
And that was always a popular show.
Yeah, people kept turning the volume up, and then the commercials would come in.
This is really quiet. Yeah. What's going on here?
Yeah. White noise. A lot of John Cage music.
Yep. So let's talk mini demo. Now, Graham, you're going to have to sit this one out because you were hobnobbing.
He was at mini demo.
I know he was.
Where the action was.
I know. I'm just teasing you.
Well, the action. I had no idea what was going on inside, but he was there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I didn't even know who was demoing. I mean, they don't announce it very far in advance. I mean, they really don't publicize it very much. In fact, I didn't even know all night while I was there. Well, somebody mentioned Docalytics. That's one of the only ones I know that pitched, but anyway.
Well, then we've seen that before. So.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of been my attitude in the past is I've seen a lot of these previously. So, you know, I don't need to go see him pitch again.
Right.
But I was having so much fun outside in the outer room that I didn't even think of it. And then did you guys say there were internet problems?
Yes.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I don't know. Were there internet problems?
Well, that's what one of the guys was claiming. I mean, he was saying that it was that they were having issues. So
yeah.
Well, I just put the presenters in the show notes at the bottom, and there were several. How many did videos? Two or were there three?
I think just two that I saw. I don't know. I think I stepped out for a little while on Docalytics, but I think it was just two.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was you had
to go pee while Docalytics was presenting.
I had to go see where you were.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Well, Docalytics.
Sure, you were okay.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, Docalytics had been around for a while, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen them in a couple of different iterations, but Hum, that app for singer-songwriters, that was cool. And why I thought it was cool was it's an app that allows you to, you know, get something out of your brain when it strikes you, when the mood strikes you. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is. We've heard about them before, haven't we? This rings a bell. It's not brand new, right?
I don't remember it. I don't remember it.
I love the name, and I remember the name. So somebody's mentioned that before.
Right. Right.
But yeah. Well, so are you saying a couple of them did videos instead of live demos?
Well, they would start with the live demo and then segue into the video. What I don't think people realize is that when you're presenting, if you're just standing there playing a video, people will not pay attention to the video.
No. They won't.
They will not pay attention. They will tune out right there. It's just the reason you're standing there is to present to them. And I can understand the frustration that somebody might feel if there is a problem with the internet. But there didn't seem to be any problems with anybody else's net.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, it's clear. I tweeted out, "Can you boo at mini demo?" Not because I want to, you know, boo, you're an awful human being, but you know, it's almost like a thumbs down. It's like you're breaking the rules. You're out.
You are. Yeah.
I mean, if you're breaking the rules,
well, maybe they should have a big gong. And if you get the gong, you're
gong done. Show. There you go. I like that. Get a little Chuck Barris action going on.
That's right.
Or a big hook.
Well, what I thought was interesting was Pearson PLC, which they're a pretty big company. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they had was this Acclaim platform, credentialing say that 10 times fast.
Credentialing, yes.
Credentialing for achievements as a platform. So, you know, think about all the training and education related things that are happening on the net. And people are going to need credentialing, but then they're also going to need a place where that can be real credentials, not fake credentials.
Yeah, I was going to say, we could really come up with some really kick-ass credentials if you really let
us. True. Well, the one, I don't know about you, but the one that really stood out for me as the highest level value prop with the worst presentation of that value prop ever was VoiceIt, the VoicePrint portal. Because the guy got up there and he was showing how to access the API and blah, blah, blah. And it was like, seriously? He didn't talk about the patent that they have. He didn't talk about the fact that, because, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, immediately objections jump into my brain. And I'm thinking, oh, wait a minute now. Do you have to say the same passphrase and it voice prints it? Then how come you couldn't record it? And I thought, oh, wait, no, they probably give you a random phrase, you know, just like a CAPTCHA. And then you have to say that random phrase and in your actual voice, so you could never record anything. Well, I poked around the website, and that's in fact exactly what they do. But he didn't say any of that stuff.
Some of these presentations. It's developers talking to developers, you know, and it kind of inside developer jokes and.
That's true.
Give me an inside developer joke.
Well, you know what I mean? They're talking developer lingo, you know, inside baseball kind of stuff, instead of presenting to a general audience, which, you know, over the years, Mini Demo has attracted more and more kinds of people.
It has.
It isn't only developers. But some people aren't clued into that, apparently, or they just want to talk to developers. I mean, you know, talking about APIs as the example you gave, you know.
Well, but except though that, you know, there were at least a half a dozen VCs that I saw at that event. And I thought, you know, I mean, come on, man, if you want to, not that they're looking for funding actively, I don't even know. But the point though is that you've got a pretty diverse audience and you better get your value prop across because you only got 7 minutes.
Hell yes. Well, you know, that's been my bitch about Mini Demo all along, is the quality of the presenters or their presentations just is not up to snuff for a general audience, you know.
Well, didn't Minnesota Cup, didn't they? I remember Scott Littman introducing some guy that they would provide pitch coaching.
Oh, yeah. Hell yes, it's not a guy, it's a woman.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Joan Moser,
Yes.
She, at the semifinalist event they had a few weeks back, she got up and made a complete pitch. She works with anybody who wants her help to help them actually do a quality presentation. And, you know, I mean, Mini Demo's a volunteer nonprofit. They don't, you know, they apparently haven't hired or can't hire coaches to help these people. So they all just kind of get up there and wing it. I mean, I hope some of them practice in front of their advisors before they climb on stage. They better. But
you know, I believe some of them are there just to show stuff off. I don't think they're necessarily. Stuff. I don't know if they're necessarily angling for investment. I mean, Target's not there for investors, you know, that sort of thing. But I think what Target was there for presenting their app was basically to you know, I think Target's realized, hey, you know, we really ought to get out from behind this big red wall and be part of the community. I think that's part of their transition in their technology department. And, you know, I know that they are trying to be more agile on the mobile side. That started over a year ago, but I think that's why they were there. Their app was okay. It wasn't anything sensational by any means.
You know, they may have reasons to be there, and this is no big surprise for recruiting purposes. There are plenty of people there for that. But maybe I don't know that they have any interest in attracting a developer community or building a developer community. But
no, I think they want to be part of it. You know,
part of it, yeah. They want to be part of the cool kids. Yeah, right. But anybody who wants to attract a developer audience, it's a great place to be, you know what I mean, for you know, to build a developer community that's going to advance their API or spread their API, you know. So there are some that recognize that, I'm sure.
Well, and I ran into Cam Gross, who told me that Gary Kolling had gone to take a VP job at BI Worldwide.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, the former Business Incentives is now BI Worldwide, and he's going to be doing, obviously, interactive development and apps and so forth. But there were several big company people, including our acclaimed Jamie Thingelstead, who's now the CTO at SPS Commerce. And he obviously, they're growing like crazy. And he's very interested in hiring really good developers and so forth. So there's going to be a real race for talent, I think, here, even locally.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. The competition for developers is definitely there. And Jamie's got to be in the catbird seat because he's like on the board and head of the board of Ministar. And certainly SPS is getting a lot of attention. We're going to see him on Tuesday, right? Is it Tuesday?
Yeah. Tuesday morning at
7:30. We're going to hear their CMO on a panel. Yeah.
Yep. Well, I'll put a link in the show notes to the mini demo presenters, and then including Target's RAD, their Rapid Application Development. And go out and look at the website because it's pretty interesting. They're clearly, they've got a great group, and they're clearly clearly pushing the envelope. But of course, the whole thing could get killed by the new CEO, right, Tim?
Right.
Maybe. Yeah. Never know. You never know. I doubt it, though.
And it doesn't start until the 12th.
Right.
Of September?
No, of August.
Of August, okay. All right.
So he doesn't start till the week after next.
Well, he seems like a pretty strong candidate. PepsiCo CEO and Walmart and.
Well, he came out of Sam's Club, but and he also was at the Michael's arts and craft business.
Yep.
So he does have a lot of retail experience. Apparently, he's very dynamic. He's a sales guy. A little disappointing they didn't get someone that was more e-commerce digital focused, but I think
I think they filled out their technical team with a lot of those folks too, right? I mean, they've staffed up there.
So. Yeah, with a guy with 40 years of IT experience.
Yes,
I mean he can probably do the XP upgrade and
he'll be in charge with the
Windows NT. He can do that.
Right. I love that.
No, he's upgrading from Windows 2000. That's what they're still.
I think he changes toner in the fax machine.
And the one thing that really kind of bugs me about this whole thing, though, is his pay package is $37 million if he does a good job. You know, if he does a bad job, it's probably, you know,
$34 million.
It's probably $15 or $20,000 or $20 million.
Yeah.
But he should have more skin in the game than that. It seems just outrageous in this day and age. You know?
Right.
If you're going to do a turnaround, you should work for a dollar and then have an upside that's hundreds of millions of dollars if you turn the company around.
Yeah, but one rub on this guy is he doesn't have turnaround experience.
Yeah, that's true. You know,
he's got a lot of good experience except for soft lines and fashion. He's not into that, but he does sound like a solid candidate, and they've finally went outside to try and bring some mojo from somewhere else, you know.
Well, we were skeptical when Best Buy brought in Jolie as well, and he seems to have worked out pretty well.
Well, I don't know. His babbling about the death of the tablet's a little bit over the top.
Yeah, Walt Mossberg. Well, okay.
I put the Walt Mossberg story because you can imagine Uncle Walt driving around town.
Yes. I would imagine Uncle Walt probably is driven around town.
Probably.
He took an Uber from the airport and he got out of here as fast as time.
Okay, but if you read the story, he said you said the tablet had crashed. Do you believe it's going away? And he said, "Yeah, crash is a strong word."
Right.
You know, tablets have been an unbelievable phenomenon, blah, blah, blah. But once you have one, do you really need the next generation? And so I would argue that that's not even the case, that the case is the phablet, you know, the phone that's growing larger means you're less likely to need a second device.
That's true.
So I went out and bought an iPad mini mainly for travel. And it's fabulous, but I think, boy, if I had a bigger iPhone, I really wouldn't even need this.
Well, look, it's really kind of come down. It's coming down to a matter of semantics. What do you call a tablet? I mean, you can call it a phablet. It's just a big phone or a small tablet. It doesn't really matter. The fact is that it's not going away anytime soon. I think if you want to take a look at sales of iPads, well, for God's sakes, have you ever seen anything hit saturation faster than the tablet did? I mean, that just was huge.
Yeah.
And there is not a lot of reason for people to rush right out and buy the next upgrade, because we're in the age of incremental upgrades now, and not these big, you know, these big swings in innovation and technology, which is, I think it's fine. I don't think you can't say the tablet is going away or declining in popularity just because they're not selling. They're lasting and people are using them, and they're also in other form factors. If you take a look at that article that we've linked to in the show notes, you know, even Uber starts talking about, you know, the Surface. And the Surface is clearly a tablet with a detachable keyboard. Why is he calling that a computer or a laptop? It's not.
That's the way that Microsoft is marketing it.
Well, that's how they marketed it. But
if you buy a Surface Pro, it is a laptop. It's running full blown Windows.
Yeah. Well, but even if you are looking at a 2-in-1. You know, a 2-in-1 is just a tablet with a glorified keyboard. So
no, it's a laptop running a full laptop operating system in a tablet form factor.
Okay, you can say that, Tim. But the consumer doesn't know the difference. They look at a tablet, and it's just, as long as it's a touch screen, it's a tablet to them.
But if you're a student going back to school, and you want a tablet for, you know, watching movies and whatever, you know, YouTube, and you need a laptop, if the guy at Best Buy says, hey, you can buy this Surface that's $800 and it's a laptop and a tablet versus a MacBook or whatever that's the same or more, I think a lot of people would be tempted to this to go with a Surface.
I'd tell them go to Craigslist to get a MacBook.
Yeah. You could do that too, but I think that tablets are kind of funny, because he's right about the upgrade. Once you get one, and most people are not going to put a ton of apps. They're going to put a few apps on there, and the mainstay apps, they support them forever. I mean, you could still have an iPad 2 and it's still perfectly usable even today. So the upgrade cycle on tablets, unless you break them, is going to be, I think, longer than laptops.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I deleted 35 apps, and I was just opening up folders saying to myself, when's the last time I opened that app? Can't remember. Goodbye.
Yep. That's what I do.
And just getting rid of them. Cause it's, you know, I've got some that look awesome and I think I'm going to use them. And then I realized last night, I opened up my productivity folder on my iPad and realized that I had 11 note-taking apps, you know, that you can do handwriting and sketching and whatever, you know. I don't think I need that many.
No. Well, I had to do an upgrade on our iPad mini only because the damn screen went weird on me. You know, when it started acting up real weird, like doing Square transactions, you go to enter $20 and it will go 2 million, you know, and it's like, wait a minute, I'm not going to charge 2 million on this guy's credit card. Okay. So,
because you know what, if he has that kind of credit line, I'd like to meet him.
Yeah, really. But then you got to go and you got to tell Square that was an accidental transaction. And so I went into the Southdale store to the Genius Bar, talked to a manager, and I said, look, this thing is a lemon. It's been doing this to us intermittently for a long time, even before the warranty.
It just won't stop playing porn. I don't know what's going on.
Well, but it was acting up before the warranty expired, but I didn't get in there in time for, you know, so I was beyond the year. It's like, I got no respect at all. Well, the best we can do for you is we can sell you a replacement at a reduced price. So, you know, instead of paying, what are they now? The non-retinas are down. Are they down to $299 or?
$299, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Best I could do is I can buy a replacement for $219. I go, okay. So there's one of your sales for for tablets, you know, a replacement because of a breakage, you know, and you can only get the exact same kind. He said, I can't even sell you a different color one. You know, you got to have the exact same black, you know, 16 gigs. It's a non-Retina. We bought it before the Retina came out. So,
well, you know, Best Buy has a warranty that has unlimited incidents. The only kicker is that you have to bring yours in, leave it, and then they have to order the iPad. So you can't do it right then. So to me, that's kind of a downside, but I went ahead and did it anyway.
Yeah, if I would have done that, I wouldn't have been out another $219 to get a replacement unit. We could have waited, you know, a few days. It's no big deal. But those iPad minis are nice. I know what you're saying. And, you know, for my wife's business, it's much easier for people to sign a Square transaction on a larger screen than on a dinky little iPhone, you know. So just for that reason alone. Plus, my wife loves taking pictures with it. She said, God, the pictures are so great, you know. So she uses it as her camera. And the only camera she has. You know, she's never really had her own camera. So she's freaking out shooting pictures of anything and everything practically. You know
what's so funny? I can't tell you how many times I've been at events and people are holding up their iPads to take pictures. And it just looks so damn funny.
It does, because they're too damn big, but a mini can kind of get away with it, you know?
The only kicker is, you know, for anybody that does any serious photography at all, but I tell you what, you do one or two times zoom into a photo in Photoshop that you've shot with your mobile device or even an iPad, and it just looks like crap. I mean, it's really bad. And you do the same thing, you know, at 3, 4, 5x on a photo that you've taken with a really good camera, and you can read the text on a coffee mug, you know, 500 feet away. You know, it's just 10 times better.
But you can't browse the web and do your email on an SLR.
This is true. Well, but you can carry along that little Sony like I've got, that little RX100. Yeah. Three, that thing is awesome.
Did you take some good shots at Mini Demo with that?
I just took a few, mainly because there really wasn't a whole lot to shoot, but.
Yeah, well, it's so crowded, you know, how do you take pictures when you're shoulder to shoulder, you know?
Right.
So, yeah. It's a nice camera, though.
I got a selfie of Phil and I. That's
true. We did a selfie.
Yeah, a couple selfies.
Cool. Well, I guess with all the people in the background, it could have been an Aussie.
Yeah. Say, I know I'm not purposely skipping over a bunch of stuff, but I got to tell you that when I saw this, the Minnesota entrepreneur that wants to get Jimmy Fallon to come to his brother's wedding on their farm in Hayfield, Minnesota, I thought this was brilliant.
First, what a great name for a farming community.
Yes.
Absolutely. It's down by Austin where I used to live. I went to high school in Austin for a couple of years, so I know all about Hayfield. Yeah. I think it's kind of between Austin and Rochester. But yeah, this is one of the people I met by staying in the outer room at Mini Demo.
Oh, really?
Tony Kramer, yeah. And he's a semifinalist in the Minnesota Cup in the high-tech division. He's got a startup called Spark Starter, which doesn't have a website yet because it's still stealth. But he's a real interesting dude.
That's really great. The only thing that I thought was kind of funny, especially for any one of you listening who's in PETA, was if you fund at various levels. For example, at the $500 level, you'll get a signed picture of Jimmy Fallon with a pig, and then you'll actually get the pig meat. That's right. You get approximately 40 pounds of meat sent to you. So they'll slaughter the pig. I'm sure they're going to slaughter the pig that Jimmy gets his picture with.
Yeah.
$1,000, you get the whole pig.
And the deal is they're trying to raise $5,000 on Indiegogo, and I think they're upwards of $4,200 already. And
they've got $4,320 right now. Yeah.
And they got 10 days to go. And I asked them, I said, well, have you gotten any reaction at all from Jimmy's people? And he said, oh, yeah, we've already talked to a junior producer. So, you know, they're getting it. What's happening is they were trying to keep it a secret because they're trying to surprise his brother, is it his brother or brother-in-law? I can't remember. With Jimmy just showing up by surprise at his wedding. Well, yeah. The problem is this is leaking out and going viral.
And yes.
It's all over Facebook now because a local TV station, I think it was down in probably Rochester, picked up on it. So, so now the whole world's going to know. But yeah, they're pretty creative of these guys. The two brothers who did it. Yeah.
Well, and I loved the pitch. We think Jimmy would actually really enjoy Hayfield, Minnesota. People from New York should have the experience of scooping up pig poop, picking rocks, playing butt darts, or driving a tractor.
Yeah. Right.
What a great incentive. Come on, Jimmy, come on out. Yeah. Come on out to Minnesota.
Well, it's just crazy enough that he might do it, you know?
Right, yeah. Right.
So it would be a bit on the Tonight Show.
It would be. Yeah, they'd bring a crew out.
Yep.
I bet you. I wouldn't be surprised if it happens.
I think it'd be great. Yep.
Yeah, no, they get a crew from CCO to cover it, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
You think?
No, wrong network.
Yeah.
Oh,
Isn't
CCO? Oh, CCO is CBS, isn't it?
Care
11.
Yep. Okay. No, that's okay.
CCO wouldn't have time because they're busy out proclaiming top 10 weather days. So,
Yeah,
today is a top 10 weather.
You know, that's amazing.
What does that mean?
That means they get to hang a little badge on it and call it that. And
it means that they can say that Sir Paul McCartney will perform on a good day.
It's just another shtick.
You know? Is anyone else disturbed that a guy that's in his 70s, is still playing very large rock venues?
I'm not disturbed at all.
But I'm not disturbed, but I'm not interested. So.
Oh man. Well, do you mean none of you guys have tickets?
Oh God, no!
Of course, if it was John Lennon, I would be there. But
hey, I've been to a McCartney concert in the front row, baby. In the '90s at Cyclone Stadium in Ames, Iowa.
I probably saw you there, my friend.
It was awesome. Did you see me passing all the checkposts to get down to row one? there were four of us, and we'd go by, and we'd kind of
make it his move.
They'd stop us, look at our credentials, and then we kind of throw our heads in the air like, Step aside. We're going to the front row.
That was when Linda was still with him too.
Yep. She was on the keyboards.
That was a very, very good concert. But that was kind of my upper limit to Paul. Cause I really am not really interested in seeing him anymore simply because I love his music. Don't get me wrong. Well, I loved his music. I don't think he's put anything out since Band on the Run that's worth a shit, but
that was a little iffy.
But he's got great backup musicians, and they put a really good show.
The guy discovered Grecian Formula, and it's just like, dude, stop.
But hey, 65 is the new 40, so what does that make 70? And look at Mick Jagger; he's still out there. Bob Dylan,
not interested in seeing those guys either. It's like,
I will tell you that
it only reminds me I'm older. So stop it.
When I was in college. My buddy's older brother walks in the dorm room and goes, "Hey, you guys want to go see Elvis?" He goes, "I got two extra tickets."
Costello or Presley?
Presley, yeah. And Kevin goes, "Yeah, I'll go." And I'm like, "Elvis Presley? Are you serious?" No, thanks. I'm not going to go. Well, what? Like 2 weeks later, the guy died. And I just think, geez, what would it have been like to be at, I think it was his last concert. I don't know, but.
Where did he do that one here?
I think he did it at the Met Center. I can't remember now.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I recall that now. That would have been 1977 or 77.
Yeah,
I think.
Something like that. Yeah.
I was in, I worked for a year in Rapid City, South Dakota in radio. And one of their big claims to fame was Rushmore Center, last place Elvis played before he died.
Was it? Okay. Yeah.
Like, oh, wow, what a great claim to fame.
Yeah.
What toilet did he sit on here?
the club down in Iowa where the music died.
Yeah.
That Surf Ballroom.
Clear Lake.
Still looks the same.
It does. It's unbelievable.
Kept it almost identical.
That's because Buddy said on his way out, he said, "Don't change a thing till I get back."
Yeah.
Oh. I have a picture of myself in a tank top and trunks standing underneath the big surf letters on the side of it with my arms raised like, yeah.
Jeez.
That's my claim to fame. I've been there, but I've never been inside.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks a lot like a ballroom, by the way, inside. Yep.
And they people show up there every year on the anniversary and celebrate with, you know, 60s music. And acts come to town, and they have a real good time.
So there was a story that I'm sure you put in, Tim, here about the open data policy heads to the Metropolitan Council.
I was kind of funny. I was interested to see that we would only be the 16th city to do that if that were to happen.
I was really surprised, but also the fact that, you know, this is at the heart of great map mashups.
Mm-hmm.
Is to have this kind of open data. And I also am surprised that it's been this long since, remember that Chicago crime mashup that was done probably in 2001? Or when
is that
whenever
the night,
Google
is that the night Chicago died?
No, that was in all seriousness, this was the one where you could choose your neighborhood in Chicago and then choose the kind of crime you wanted to see, and the map would automatically populate in near real time with the data.
You make it sound like it's like let's go to a show. What crime do we want to see?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, here's a spot where there's lots of murders. Let's go down there and hang around and see
Get
what
the
happens.
Kids. Pop some popcorn. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a good thing because, you know, San Francisco did this for their watershed. They started putting sensors in probably 12, 15 years ago throughout the San Francisco watershed, everything that flows into the bay and, you know, checking water quality and water levels and flow rates and all that kind of stuff. And it's all the data is open. And so there's been all these communities who have created their little map mashups of flow and they're able to go in and you can see areas by color. So if it's green, it means that the flow out of that area of the watershed is good. And if it's, you know, orange or red, they can go in and they can hammer on the homeowners around there to say, hey, quit throwing that pesticide on your lawn, or, you know, stop, you know, you did construction and you didn't keep the dirt out of the creek, you know, stuff like that. And it's all because the data is open.
So Tim, what did you think about this piece? I know we kind of jumped all over it and haven't let you get a word in edgewise.
No, I think it's a good thing. That's why I put it in the notes. Is that I'd like to see more and more of this data, you know, put out there so that people can do different things with it and remix it. So yeah. I think that a lot of unintended things would come out of it that would be good.
I think so.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Well. I really like this article, even though it made me sad in the Star Tribune about you know, the one that Lee Schaefer did.
Don't be sad
about the Minnesota loses when tech firms head west, talking about Zach Zapala taking off with Spark Labs for San Francisco, and you know, I love the Twin Cities, but I got to tell you that if I lived in the Bay Area, there would literally be something to go to every night.
Oh yeah.
You know, in terms of unbelievable tech meetups and events and talks, and I mean, just the amount of stuff going on is it's just mind-boggling.
In fact, I think it's interesting that, you know, from a standpoint of, you know, I'm sad that Zach feels it necessary to leave Minneapolis, but at the same time, I can't really blame him. Zach had more luck finding funding from outside sources than he did here locally. I mean, it's not that he didn't find funding, some funding locally, but the bulk of his funding came from places like, well, first, you know, Kickstarter, which was, you know, which is international in scope, but he also spent some time at an incubator in China. There was the ability to get some funding there. And now he's finding that the funding is available in the Bay Area. And you can't blame a guy for looking out for his investment and his company to go where the money is.
Yeah,
and I know it's disappointing. But at the same time, it's not so bad to be a place that spawns tech startups no matter where they end up.
Yep. Yeah. I agree.
It's not bad.
No, it's not a bad thing. And remember, about half the company's staying here. You know, now I don't know how long it'll be half the company because they're going to be hiring more out there. But, you know, I had a nice conversation with Stephanie Rich, the PR marketing director, and she made clear that, you know, she's staying here, and some senior developers are going to remain here as well at Coco Uptown. And yeah, they might be hiring more of their new employees out there, but they're also possibly going to be hiring some in virtual locations as well. And they do have two full-time employees in China. So, you know, it wasn't just a Minnesota company. And, you know, the main incentive to be out in the Bay Area beyond the money, and they claim that wasn't a condition of them getting the money, is to be closer to customers. There's way more hardware engineers and hardware startups and big hardware companies out there than there is here, let's face it. So they got to be where their customers are. And not unlike many other fast-growing tech companies here locally, you got to have feet on the street out there eventually, especially if your customers are out there. I mean, look at W3i, now NativeX. They've had feet on the ground out there for quite some time, and that's picking up. Companies need to be in multiple locations depending on what their business is. But, you know, the Bay Area is usually right at the top of the list of where to be, you know? I think the headline on that column, you know, was misleading and was clickbait, you know, because, you know, Lee in the story, they really didn't make the case that it hurts Minnesota, you know. Although he nicely brought in John Dahl, and I helped him connect with John. And, you know, John comes back here. He's out in the Bay Area with Bright Cove since he got acquired by Bright Cove. But he still comes back to Fargo, where he's from, and he's doing things back here. So he's, you know, going to contribute ongoing after, you know, having a successful exit himself. I'm sure he's going to be contributing to the local ecosystem, whether it's Fargo or the Twin Cities, or you can think of them almost as one and the same. It's getting to be. So, you know, I was glad to see that he brought in that positive link. I think it's bad that Spark got negative reaction to what they did. And you know, they felt bad about that because, you know, they thought it was a positive thing that they're growing and, you know, and they are, and got money to scale it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I feel a hell of a lot worse about Medtronic making themselves an Irish corporation, you know, doing an inversion because of that big trend, you know, taking all the tax money out of the country. So I feel worse about that than I do about Zach heading to the Bay Area.
Oh, I agree. Well,
yeah, but again, it's not going to affect their Minnesota operations. They will still be here. They still have, you know, what do they have, 8,000 employees or something outrageous number like that in the state. You know, they're going to continue to grow here. So, you know, that's a business decision, and that's because the tax code is so effed up and has been ignored for way too long, and the United States is way behind the rest of the world, and that's just a reflection on that. And it's a business decision, you know?
Well, of course it is. Of course it is. It's, you know, but I mean, it would be, you know, my wife and I have talked about when we retire, you know,
do we want to go sometime soon?
Well, do we want to go to Texas? Do we want to go to Florida? No state income tax. You know, I mean, we could suddenly get a nice little bump. But I don't want to live in Texas. I don't want to live in Florida.
It's hotter than hell and humid as hell.
Well, and then then I'd have to be, if I lived in Texas, I'd have to believe that the earth was 6,000 years old and, you know, that creationism should be taught in schools. So I don't want to be down there.
Not that we're generalizing or anything.
Not at all.
No, I know.
Thank you, Tim.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I know
Catholic priests that believe in evolution. So, you know.
Yeah.
No, I know. I mean, come on.
Really?
You say.
Really?
Yeah, you don't have to be a crackpot creationist.
Can you speak their names publicly?
Yeah, Father Robert Ballister.
God love
from,
him.
From Twit. I mean, I believe the same thing. It's a, you can have a foot in both camps.
No, I know. It's just the elected representatives that spew the wrong lines.
Yeah.
But speaking of education, online learning venture for teachers lands big contract. I was less interested in that than I was in this Whitewater Learning. Actually, having they've got more than 60 online courses or modules, they call them, that can, teachers can take on their own time and they can use to meet licensing requirements. And here's why that's a big deal. I have three sister-in-laws, two of whom are still actively teaching, that have to do all these offsite continuing education units. But they've got to go somewhere, right? And they've got to sit in a classroom all day. And
isn't that what they do in the summer? All the teachers?
Exactly. Yep. And so, you know, this about being able to do it and do it virtually, I would think, oh my God, you know, if you could do it at your cabin then.
Yeah. It's a great idea.
I think it's a great, yeah, so do I. So that was a good find there, young Mr. Tim.
Hey, I keep a track of what Kathy Grayson's writing.
Well,
hey,
but also you have a genius level IQ, so you see all this stuff.
Of course.
I didn't know that. That's
and I have
great.
To say that I was looking for Julio's stuff, and I didn't see anything this week. So I guess maybe he's on the porch.
Yeah, he went to the Bay Area.
He put out a Harrow request. I'm sorry about looking for feedback on the death of the tablet thing. So he may be doing a follow up piece on that.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, yeah, we'll talk about that next time.
Yeah. Great.
But Kathy Grayson does turn up good stuff at the Business Journal. So kudos to her.
Yeah, she really keeps her finger on the pulse.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, she's a hardworking reporter. And Julio is too, and you know they're competing for stories all the time.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
good for them.
Well, so there's a startup called, what is it, Synek or Synek, Synek. Mm. Anybody know how to pronounce it? But they have a Keurig machine for beer.
Well, you know, and I looked at that. It's like it's not really a Keurig machine. It's a little bitty tap. It's like a little kegerator, isn't it?
Well, it is, but you plug it in and it keeps it refrigerated. Right. So you don't have to put it in the refrigerator.
You mean like a refrigerator?
Right. Like a refrigerator.
If you don't have a refrigerator, this is a great thing to have.
Yeah, but you'd have beer on tap.
Oh. I mean, when I first saw it, I thought, well, okay, wait, how does this brew beer? Because a Keurig brews coffee.
Right. I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to have a Pacifico now, and then next one I'm going to have a
Dos Equis
Ember.
Right. No, how are they going to pull that off? It's really kind of just a little bitty kegerator. It's a tabletop kegerator for your growler. It's like a refrigerated growler.
Yeah, but you know what the good thing about this would be? It'd be much, much, much easier than laying next to the keg when you're sucking down the beer directly from the tap. What?
But the people you meet when you lay next to the tap.
That's right.
Is that what happens at Coco on beer night?
Oh, God. I don't know.
Anyway,
well, so Apple's in the news again. Can you believe it?
It's amazing.
Do tell.
So the Apple TV overhaul not expected to debut until 2015.
I know. I was disappointed because one of my predictions for this year is they're going to have a big deal on the Apple TV.
Well, they're
it might even be a freaking TV, but no, it's not.
Well, they keep sneaking apps onto the Apple TV.
They're so far behind Roku, though. It's ridiculous.
Really?
How far behind? Oh yeah, they're way far behind on content. They're way far behind on the interface, on search, everything. So I don't think they're if you're part of the Apple ecosystem, they're the only way to get at that content. So if you're all Apple like you are, Steve, that's the only one to have. But if you're just a regular person that doesn't necessarily have a investment in the Apple ecosystem and it may be more open, Roku is a much better buy. It's cheaper, more content. The search is great. It searches across all the channels, helps you find stuff. Apple doesn't have any of that yet, and they could. And their interface is not great for finding stuff either. So they really need to do something, and so I was disappointed that we're not going to see anything major until next year.
Yeah, they're running out of time calling this thing a hobby, you know? I mean, Jobs did. I don't know if Tim Cook does, but come on, you know, do something with it or, you know, or not.
Well,
or,
can you imagine if they stuck their current processor in, what is it, A7 now or A8, whatever it is, the latest greatest one, they could do a game console on it. And so they could have a $150 game console.
Well, I'm sure that's what they're going to do, and then you'll use your iPhone or iPad as a controller.
Or maybe they'll have a dedicated controller for $50.
Yeah.
I mean, if they did that, then at least they would match what Amazon's doing with the Fire TV.
Yeah. So if you were going to recommend, Tim, to someone about a Roku, they have a stick like the Chromecast, and then they have a Roku 1, 2, and 3. Which would you recommend?
I'd go for the 3.
And tell everyone why.
It's got a faster processor, so it's more zippy. And it has a remote that has a headphone jack in it so that you can put it up to headphones. So it's great for in the bedroom where you want to watch a TV show at higher volume and not wake someone up. So you plug in your headphones into the remote.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. It's really cool that way.
And also, I'm sure you've noticed it has a light that comes on every time you touch it or move it or something. So you can find it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. And it's got like a wrist strap on the little remote and.
Well, does it have
like Wii technology? Is that?
Yeah, it does. So that particular remote you can play Angry Birds with.
Ah,
interesting.
So it has a little bit of gaming, but it's very light duty gaming. It's not nearly as ambitious as what Amazon is doing and that Apple should be really doing.
Yeah.
Did you see the snarky comment under that 9 to 5 Mac story on Apple TV? Apple TV is delayed. The iWatch is delayed. The phablet is delayed. I can't wait until next year when they tell us how the 2015 product pipeline is full of new things. Yeah. And then some guy says, how can something never announced be delayed?
Yeah, exactly.
That's true. That's true. But they bought that radio app Swell.
Yeah.
What's being dubbed a Pandora for books.
Did anyone use Swell?
No.
Because it's a great idea. It's like Pandora for podcasts, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you put in your interests, and it picks podcasts that it thinks you will like and plays them, like streams them, and you do the thumbs up, thumbs down to like fine tune it.
Yeah, it's a cool concept for sure.
No, it is. It's great for discovery because that's one of the big problems with iTunes is that there's so much content there and the search is so bad. It's very difficult to, to find good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. So this is their, it's like a talk radio.
Well, yeah, it recommends like shows. So if you like listening to, let's say, Security Now from the TWiT network, it will recommend other security-related podcasts, things of that nature. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
I'm not sure, the one story that we didn't put in here, and I'll find it and put it in the show notes, because when I look at all this stuff and I look at the rumor of the enhanced Apple TV or whatever it's going to be, Apple has unveiled some of their content delivery network stuff, and they have, if nobody who's listening, if you don't know what a content delivery network is, it's essentially being able to tag all your media automatically. And then that media goes out to edge servers all around the internet. And Akamai is probably the biggest one out there. They've got thousands, 25,000 servers around the world. So if I come to your website and I'm in Japan, then I see the updated text and so forth, but the media itself, if I start watching a video, it's actually stored locally in Japan, and I'm going to see the video streamed right from there. So it's significantly faster, and you can give everybody the same experience everywhere. And so Apple was, I'm sure, paying tens of millions of dollars a quarter to Akamai, and they ended up building out their own multi-terabit $100 million CDN, and so they've got their own content delivery network. So I think that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hey, I know we got to move to the next bit, but one story I put in here that I'm not sure if anyone but Graham or I could read is the Hilton upgraded technology story.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
Yeah. In a nutshell, this was going to be my cool thing of the week before I found another cool thing. But they're gonna let everyone not only book stuff directly on their iPhone or Android device, but also they're going to have the ability to open your room. So your room key effectively is your smartphone.
Great. Never have to go to the front desk again.
Yep.
That's actually cool. I like that.
It's very cool.
Yep.
Hilton will get a lot of business because of that.
And you guys should have a Wall Street Journal online subscription. Well, we get the
paper. I just need to log in.
I get both the paper and online.
I just haven't logged in.
They have a combo deal.
Paper?
Yep. Yeah.
What's paper?
I do that too.
Yeah. Paper? What's this paper you speak of?
It's still out there. Still the top subscribed newspaper in the country. They kind of go back and forth with the USA Today. I don't know which is in first right now, but yep. Got to read.
Are you talking journalistically or?
No, just the circulation size. Yeah.
There you go. Well, listen, I think we need to delve into what's happening in the free world of security. How about we touch base with Steve and see if he's got a tip of the week? Does he?
Steve's security tip of the week.
I'll be damned, he does.
Okay, did you like the horse?
No, that's always a good touch.
That's a new addition, Phil. You didn't hear that last week.
I'm sorry, I missed it. Yeah.
Well, so I've been really interested in what this guy, Phil Zimmerman, has done. Phil is the guy who invented Pretty Good Privacy, which was an encryption scheme and software that allowed you to publish a public key and keep your private key private, obviously. So if somebody sent you a message using your public key, you're the only one who could decrypt it, right? So that whole public key cryptography is still today one of the most secure ways of doing things. And his new company, Silent Circle, they've developed this Black Phone, which is an Android-based secure phone. And you can make calls with it to anyone else with a Black Phone, but that's it, right? So it's a great concept. It's just, you know, you got to spend $600 for a phone and not everyone's going to do that. So what I've been really intrigued by is there are two apps out. There's actually more than this, but these are the two big ones. The first one was Red Phone for Android. And if you have the app and someone else has the app and you use the app to call someone on their Android phone, you can have a encrypted communication tunnel so your voice can't be eavesdropped on. There's a new one for iOS that just came out called Signal, and it's the same thing. If you and someone else you know has Signal, you can make an encrypted call, and neither one of these have been fully torn apart by security researchers, but they sure look like they're the right thing at the right time, and I think they're going to do pretty well. So if you have a need or you're paranoid, you know, you got a tinfoil hat on, I don't know anybody like that, but anyway.
I do. Do we know what Snowden and Greenwald, what phones they use? They've got to use something like this, right?
They were using, the whole thing, I'm reading Greenwald's book, I'm about halfway through, and they used some secure chat, but they didn't say what it was. And there are many different methods of secure chat, so I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe they don't use phones.
I don't think they do. And remember when Snowden spoke to that HopeX conference, you know, he was running through proxy servers and everything else, and he did the same thing at South by Southwest.
Yeah.
Where he spoke, and it was really bad, but at HopeX it was good. So they figured out something in terms of communication that that is significantly better. And there's also a new Tor protocol, you know, the onion router that lets you surf safely and so on. Mm-hmm. There's something called TorX, which is secure chat. And I'm going to poke into that. Maybe that'll be a tip in the future.
I don't know. We had a lot of stories this week. So one of the stories that I was going to put in, but I took out, was that the government, the U.S. government, is investing in Tor. So I don't think that's going to be the place for great privacy.
Well, actually, the Department of Defense is the first one who invested in Tor, actually created Tor, because they wanted a secure way to do it. Say, Graham, I think you're scratching on your microphone.
Well, it's about an inch away from my cheek, so I don't know how that's happening.
Maybe it's the cord.
I moved it up.
Often
I moved it up.
Okay. Weird. Okay. Well, kids,
it's time for the cool thing of the week.
It's time for the cool thing of the week. No, I'm going last.
You're going last?
Yeah. Unless you want me to go first. I just did the security thing.
Oh, okay. So
how about
you're thinking people are tired of hearing your dulcet tones?
Yes.
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think so. I don't think it's true. But go ahead.
You want me to go?
No, Tim, go ahead.
All right. So my cool thing of the week is something called the Ink Case Plus. And this is something that I think is a great idea. It's basically a 6-inch e-ink screen, which uses an Android app that helps it like mirror the stuff that's on your regular screen. So it's a case that has an e-ink screen. And so you could do things like you could use that as book reader outside, which of course is a problem with LCD screens. Or you can, put stuff like your boarding pass, for instance, stuff like that out there. And of course, because it's a fully separate screen with its own battery, it doesn't take any battery off your regular screen. That's their whole way of selling it. There's a lot of things wrong with the Incase Plus, though. It only works with this Galaxy S5. But if you look at this company, and there's another one as well doing a similar thing, they both support the iPhone 5 and the 5S. So this has apparently been a thing for a while that I haven't seen, until now. But I think it's a great idea, and I'd like to have one as long as they would support the kind of phone that I use.
Right.
Right.
Well, it's a great concept, and for those that don't know much about e-ink, once you write something to the screen, it just stays there until you do something else, and it doesn't take any battery at all. And so that's one of the reasons that the Kindle with e-ink, the doggone thing is what, like 87 years of battery life? I mean, it's just unbelievable.
We should point out this is a Kickstarter project.
Correct.
So it doesn't exist yet.
Correct.
Right?
Yes. Right. Yes. So, Mr. Thickens.
Well, it does exist for the iPhone. It doesn't exist for the Android yet.
Oh, okay.
But it will, and they're almost double their goal. They're almost 200,000 of 100,000 to goal with 11 days to go. So they will definitely make this thing.
Cool. Well, very Graham, nice. What's your cool thing of the week?
Okay. Well, this isn't a brand new thing by any means. In fact, I've owned it for probably close to a year, maybe 8 or 10 months, but I just really started using it. You know, it's one of those gadgets you get and I go, yeah, I'll have to fiddle with that sometime. But actually, it's called the Automatic Smart Driving Assistant, and it's a device and an iPhone app, and they probably have Android too. I wouldn't know, not being an Android boy. But anyway, it's called Automatic. You just go to automatic.com, and what it does, it helps you drive smarter, save big on gas, and track your trips and your driving score. And you can automatically call for help in a crash. And you can always remember where you parked. This thing plugs into your, whatever you call that thing, under your steering column, that port where they do all the diagnostics. I guess most cars after 1996 have these things. And when I originally bought it, my son had bought an old Saab wagon, and he needed to. You can diagnose your check engine light issues with this thing. And so instead of going into some dealership or garage and paying them to diagnose your problem, you can just plug this thing in, and it'll tell you what's going on. So with the app. So anyway, I just started using it in my Passat wagon, because I'm getting some weird, engine lights, including tire pressure, that's driving me crazy. But it doesn't tell me about those. Like, it doesn't tell me which sensor and which tire is causing the problem, which I hoped it would, but it doesn't. It just does the engine light.
Certain analytic tools work differently on the ports. So it's the same thing with like a Volvo. There are certain things that are universal, but then there are things that are not universals.
So it's going to
through that port. So
it's going to work differently on different cars. Is that what you mean?
Well, no. There are general codes that are universal. You know, like a check engine light, it'll tell you that you've got an emission problem, but it won't tell you where in the emission system it is.
It's a $99 device. When I bought it, it was on special, and I can't remember. It might have been a Kickstarter. But I think I only paid $69 for it, but I see it's $99.95 now. The app is free. It does some really cool things. And it's Bluetooth enabled, you know, obviously. So I'm gonna use it and check my app, you know, when I'm at stop signs and I'm not texting. I only do at stop signs, of course. But if you're listening, Edina Police Force, anyway, it's cool. It's a cool little product, and it works very well.
Yeah, so, no, I agree. I've always thought that this was great software, and they've only recently supported Android. So when I needed the same sort of thing, I actually bought one of the generic Chinese devices on eBay. Not eBay. I bought it on Amazon. It was like $12 for the little thing that you plug into your port of your car. And then there's an app called Torque on Android that's, I think it's $3 or $4, but they have a free version too, so you can try it out before you buy it. And it does essentially the same thing that this does. So for $20 or less than $20, you can sort of replicate it, at least on Android, and probably it also works on iOS. Maybe not with as good a software as this, but all I wanted to do was to diagnose what the check engine light, you know, was, and it saved me quite a bit of money.
Yeah, they charge an outrageous fee at some of these garages to diagnose.
Well,
it's like $80.
At Toyota, they charge a $99 diagnostic fee.
Okay.
And all they do is drive the car back, plug the damn thing in, and run the diagnostics, and then they tell you what's going on. It's like, that's worth $100, seriously?
Yeah, it's
you should go get one of these, Steve.
Well, exactly. That's
$99.
Well, here's what's so funny. I asked a guy yesterday at the post office. I stopped him and I said, "Hey, can I ask you a quick question?" He goes, "Sure." And he has a black Jetta TDI. Passat.
What are you doing with that automatic weapon at the post office?
That's right. But he had a black Passat, which is the turbo diesel. And I wanted to ask him about his mileage and all that kind of stuff. And the guy takes his phone out. So he must have had this already. Guy takes his phone out, launches the app, and starts showing me the last 10 trips that he took and what mileage he got.
That's what you can do.
It's just hilarious.
Was it the automatic app or was it something else?
I didn't look at the app. He was just showing me the data. I was just focused on the data. Oh. So I'm not sure, but I will get this. This is pretty awesome.
The UI on the app is very, very nice. And you know, the product itself is smaller than, it's about the size of a small cookie, you know, maybe 3/4 of an inch thick.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't get in your way. So I'm finally using the thing now that my son gave it back to me.
So Filson. Mr.
Hello.
Phil, what's your big adventure?
This has been around for a little while as well, but it's called Solver, S-O-U-L-V-E-R. It is basically an application for Mac that allows you to, you know, work with numbers, as they say, work with numbers the way you think of them. So
you have a Mac version though, Phil? I've had this for iOS forever.
Yep.
It's a great app. So they have a Mac app for this.
A Mac app. Yep. Goes right on. You know, again, nice. You can basically, you know, you type in your problem as you'd write it on a piece of paper, and it basically pulls out the numbers and puts them in a right order and gives you an answer. It's really nice. I use it a lot when I'm talking about estimating projects, or if I'm, you know, doing some book work of some kind and, you know, figuring out a comp plan or something like that. So it's been a very handy app. I was turned on to it by Josh Walker, one of my guys my partners over at HyperIQ. So just a really slick little app. So if you haven't heard of it, check it out. Solver, S-O-U-L-V-E-R.
Very nice.
And what I like about it is it's almost like a spreadsheet that someone invented now, instead of like way back in the text-based era. You know, it just works by sort of natural language.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah. $11.99, but well worth it, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well worth it.
Wow. Well, my cool thing of the week is something that...
Does your wife ever get tired of you changing the phone system?
I know. What is it about you? Every cool thing of the week is a phone system.
Look, no. I went from $700, $600 to $700 a month in telephony costs back in 2009. We switched to RingCentral, and I dropped my phone costs down to under $170 a month. You know, same stuff, and we got all kinds of new features and digital fax and all kinds of stuff. And so RingCentral has been fine until I decided that I would buy this Yealink IP phone for the office with two handsets, an IP phone system that you can, the phone system is capable of being able to switch to things. And I had such a problem. I think I might've mentioned on another podcast that I ended up writing an open letter to the CEO and all that. And I ended up switching to Nextiva, and, it held all kinds of promise, and they had US-based tech support instead of in the Philippines, so it was much easier to communicate, get concepts across, and so forth. Here's the thing. After 32 hours of configuration and attempts to do this and that, just to build a simple call flow, I literally called them this week and said, I'm sorry, I'm done. I'm pulling the plug. I'm cutting my losses. You know, and then they tried to save the account and blah, blah, blah. And so I decided I'm going to take a breath and just stay at RingCentral until I found Telxio. And if you're a startup or you're a small business and you want to have a very easy to use, easy to configure phone system that doesn't cost very much, Telxio is freaking awesome. And so they have a call flow. You can go in and you can take the demo and you can build a call flow. So what happens when you have an incoming call? Well, you probably want to have your opening hours there. So if you're closed, it'll go to voicemail. If it's open, then you can have extensions. You can sort of have an interactive menu under it. You can build this whole flow chart and put in voicemails and all that stuff. And you can set everything up and configure it. And it took me literally what took me 4.5 hours to build in Nextiva took me 5 minutes to do in Telxio. And they give you unlimited SIP extensions, which is that voice over IP protocol. And they give you unlimited extensions, which means you can have an unlimited number of people that you can route calls to and to any phone number. And yes, you pay for the incoming and outgoing calls. And then if it's forwarded, you pay the both of those. But I added up all the minutes that we use every month on average. And I looked at the pricing, and I think I can drop our costs down to between $50 and $60 a month. Worst case, $75.
Huh.
Worst case. And wow. I'll have significantly more capability. And I can literally add, if I want to add 25 people tomorrow, all with virtual extensions that go to their cell phones, I can do it. So I looked at this and I said, this is the one I'm going to use to scale up the Innovate Press business with all the virtual people that are managing sites, which is a whole nother topic. But any startup that was that needed a telephone system with a directory and, you know, hey, press 1 for Phil, 2 for Tim, 3 for Graham. Sorry, we don't have an extension for Steve, but anyway, send him an email. but it's fabulous. And so I'm going to do the number porting and I'm going to use this. I was a little hesitant, so I sent an email to the CEO about the fact that some of the documentation was missing because I need to set up this IP phone. And he said they're building video tutorials now. Everything's going to jibe with the release of Telxio 2.0, which is going to have even more features and an even better user interface. And they're already profitable, so they haven't taken any funding. And he said, but we're going to be staffing heavily over the next 6 months, so we're considering it. And they're based in LA. And I'm really impressed.
Does it require any special equipment? Do you have to get a special router or anything? Or
nothing. No.
Nothing. Okay. No. You just need IP phones.
and you need a way to plug it in. I mean, you need to be able to plug in. No, you don't need IP phones.
Oh, you don't?
No, your extensions can roll, but you got to have a phone number. I mean, it's like Google Voice.
Right.
You know, you can't.
Right. Yeah.
Google Voice isn't going to ring a phone unless there's already a number attached to it. But if you wanted to buy a phone number for Skype, you could do that. You know, I mean, there's a lot of ways you can have. Oh, and here's the thing. They use the Xlite, X-L-I-T-E soft phone, which you can use on your computer. And there's also an upgrade for $40. You can upgrade it and get the Bria 4 version, which is much better. And you can do essentially everything with Skype video and all that stuff. And you can route calls directly to that. So you don't even have to buy an IP phone.
Do you use the $9.99 standard plan per month or the $29.99 pro plan?
It all depends. If you want phone support, you got to go to the $29.99. Now, that's per phone number. So if you have a regular phone number, you'd choose one of those pricing tiers. And then if you had an 800 number like we do, you'd also choose one of those tiers. So like with the 800 number, probably just choose the $1 level and then just pay by the minute.
Right.
So you'd forward it to your other call flow, to your other phone number.
Right.
And it's cheap. I mean, I worked out all the numbers. I play with the spreadsheets and I realized, you know, if we did like 1,000 more calls a month, or 1,000 more minutes a month, if we use it, which is impossible. I mean, we're never going to do that, but let's say we did. It would be an additional $40, $42 a month, $45 a month, worst case, if I was at the dollar a month plan. Mm. And so it's like, that's nothing. So
anyway. Their pricing per minute is like minuscule.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's mine.
Cool.
Well, how about events, kids? Is there anything new coming up? I mean, that we haven't covered. Mini Demo 18. Can you believe that's September 11th? That's pretty close, isn't it?
It is. It's interesting date to pick up for that, but we had seven demos this last time.
Seven.
So
yep.
Hopefully they can fill that many.
Yes.
We'll go from there.
Hey, I have a question. Mobile Twin Cities, that's happening on August 11th. Is that the first time you've done one at Coco?
No, this will be the second time.
Okay.
This will be the second time.
How is that for a venue in the evening?
It's nice. It's very nice. We have the classroom set up there. So it's, bring in pizza and drink and enjoy chatting a little bit and then networking a mite. And then we kind of do some housekeeping things and have a presenter. So it's all iOS 8 this time around. We're just talking about the possibilities for both, the developers and, users, whether they be business or marketers. And you can check that out. And, now that it's been sort of in beta for a while and we've had our hands on it, it's getting to learn a little bit more from you. And the two guys that are presenting on it, one is a mobile developer by the name of Sebastian Celis. Sebastian is a brilliant developer that's currently working for a startup based in Austin, but he's here locally. And then also Josh Walker, who is an iOS developer, works for me, works for us. I shouldn't say works for me because we're partners now. So they've both spent some good time with dealing with understanding Swift, understanding HealthKit, things like that. So it'll be interesting to find out what they've learned.
Cool. And you're going to have tequila shots with lime?
Sure.
Okay, sure. So anyway, so I added another Minnesota Cup event. I realized that, Life Science Health IT Division finalist reception where they're going to announce the finalists. We've had in here at August 12th at Treehouse, but August 14th, 2 days later, at the offices of a law firm by the name of Lori Besikoff, is going to be the high tech division finalist reception where they'll announce the three finalists. So that's Thursday, August 14th, late afternoon.
Great. Yeah. And that link you put in has links to the finalists if they have a website. There's a couple that don't, but.
Right.
So, okay.
Yep. Couple that are still stealth. Yep. But we will know who the three finalists are in all the categories very soon. Those are the two that relate to what most of us are involved in. So
right, right. Well, great.
All right.
Well,
appreciate, so what's going on?
Appreciate everybody listening this week, and we will see you next week on.
Oh.
The minigame.
Oh, that's easy for you to say.
Okay, once again. And take we'll two. See you next week on.
Take two. No, wait a minute. I'm not ready.
All right. La, 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 la. Go ahead.
There'll be lots going on next week, and we'll talk about it on
the Minivate Gang podcast.
Yes, we will.
See, that's the way it's done.
Got it.
Right.
See you, boys.
See ya.